Hey, loyal listener, call WHFR at 313-845-9676 or toll free at 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
What? I couldn't hear that last part.
That's 845-9676 or toll free 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Man will never fly. Man will never set foot on the moon. An instantaneous worldwide communication is impossible. These are just some of the claims made by science a little more than 100 years ago. What other claims of impossibility do they assert today? These are some of the subjects that are broached in the book Science Was Wrong, Startling Truths About Cures, Theories, and Inventions They Declared Impossible by Kathleen Marden and Stanton Friedman. Kathleen Marden was on the show just last month when we tackled the subject of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case in 1961. And if you'll recall, Kathleen is Betty and Barney's niece. So unfortunately, we ran out of time on that show, so I've asked her to return today. So please welcome back Kathleen Marden. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm fine, and it's great to be with you again.
Well, I'm glad you agreed to come back. I was telling our listeners that last month you were on talking about your aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, and their abduction in 1961. But we didn't get a chance to talk about your book, Science Was Wrong. Actually, you're co-author with Stanton Friedman on that. Science Was Wrong, Startling Truths About Cures, Theories, and Inventions They Declared Impossible. Can you give us an overview of the book?
Sure, I'd love to. We have five different sections. The first one is on aerospace technology. Dan wrote that, and it has three chapters on aviation, space, and Jupiter and Earth. The second section is on technology, communication, and a chapter called Cold Fusion or Fraud. The third section is on medicine, and I wrote those three chapters. They're Politics, Personalities, and Childbed Fever, about Ignaz Semmelweis, an Austrian physician who searched very hard and found the cause of childbed fever, but was shunned throughout Europe and debunked because of it.
Mm-hmm.
The smallpox wars, about the history of smallpox and the attempts to eradicate the disease, and the hemophilia holocaust, about the blood banks in our country and factor VIII concentrate being used on to control bleeding hemophiliacs. And this took place during the time when HIV was just beginning to surface in this country. The statement was made that there was one chance in a million that hemophiliacs would contract HIV by using factor VIII concentrate. In the end, 90% contracted HIV.
Hmm.
It was a devastating mistake.
Right.
And so I go into the history of that. The next section is on politics, the eugenics movement in America. And that was very, very interesting to me personally, because we were talking about that and studying that when I was in college, both in my social work and sociology classes and in my genetics class, where people were being sterilized forcibly because they didn't fit into society due to certain characteristics that they exhibited. Then I have chapters on one on methyl mercury in the food chain. It's organic mercury that forms at the bottoms of lakes and oceans and is a powerful neurotoxin. Another one that Stan wrote is Global Warming, Man or Nature. Mm. And then we get to the last section. It's Frontiers of Science. And in that we have Impossible Visible Feats, a chapter about the telepathy experiments that have been done in academic institutions around the world. Another one on UFOs, and the last is called The Conundrum of Alien Abduction, where I get into the Condon Committee's work on the scientific study of UFOs and the decision that all of the funding should go not to the study of UFOs, but to the study of the individuals who are reporting seeing them or being abducted by them. So I get into the results of all of these studies.
Oh, very good. I was going to ask you about global warming. Science wouldn't believe that global warming had anything to do with man's activity. What have they found? Were they wrong?
Well, it depends upon what scientist you ask. Some scientists say that global warming is directly the result of evil CO2.
Mm.
It is entirely caused by human activity, and that we need to stop this CO2. Now, this is a chapter written by Stanton Friedman. Each of us wrote seven chapters in this book. And we have chapters at the end of the book about UFOs. I know everyone's interested in that and the paranormal. But in terms of global warming, there are many scientists who believe that there are other contributing factors. And those factors have to do with activity on the sun.
Mm.
And as Stan talks about in the book, it's not all CO2 in many ways. CO2 is a very good thing.
So does Stan Friedman believe that there's nothing to this man's activity or just a contributing factor?
He believes that we can't control, we can try to control, but we can't totally control what is going on in terms of climate warming because so much of it is caused by activity on the sun and is beyond our control.
Right. And there have been a lot of solar storms lately also that, you know, the UV ray count is really, really high.
Yes.
People get sunburned just like that.
Yes, and in many areas of the globe, you have to be very, very careful about going outside because of the holes in the ozone layer,
right,
or the thinning of the ozone layer. Florida is one. We're advised to stay inside here, make sure that we're wearing some very good sun protection.
Right, right. Well, we're having the same thing here in Michigan, so there you are. What about EM shift, Earth's gravitational pull, north and south poles? There's evidence to show that the Earth has toppled over on its side just like that, instantaneously, within hours. Do you find that's true?
Well, that is a really scary thought. That had happened at one time in the past. We know that our electromagnetic fields are weaker than they used to be. There has been some work by scientists done on that in the past, but our magnetic fields are continuing to weaken. So I don't know what the end result of that will be.
Because they found, I think it's the Antarctic. Is it the Arctic or Antarctic where they found mastodons flash frozen with the meat still on them and the food still in their mouth? And
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Something happened very, very drastically and very, very quickly.
Yeah, which showed that, at one point, the poles were tropical.
Yes, and, perhaps we did have a very radical polar shift.
Yeah.
The question is, was that caused when the Earth was hit or impacted by a huge meteor, or asteroid, or was it the result of a collapsing magnetic field? We don't know the answer to those questions.
Well, even if an asteroid, and I know asteroids have hit the Earth, but, even if that happened, would that cause the Earth to topple over like that, do you think?
I think it would depend upon the size of it.
Have to be pretty big.
It would knock it. It would definitely knock it off its axis, at least some.
Well, a while ago, I forget which earthquake it was, but there was an earthquake that was so strong that it shifted the pole just the slightest bit.
Yes, yes. I think that was the one in Japan, but I can't swear to it.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Absolutely. We did
right.
Have a little bit of a polar shift there.
Yeah, but not enough to make the tropical areas all of a sudden at the poles.
Very true.
Yeah, well, brother.
We can't predict the future. I just think that it's better to live in the present and not worry about what might happen. That's my philosophy of life.
Well, yeah, but, we kind of want to theorize what's going to happen based on what is happening now, and what has happened in the past. They say if you don't know where you've been, how do you know where you're going? So,
well, I think that applies to things like war and human activity.
Yeah, except we don't learn from wars, do we?
No, unfortunately, we haven't.
Yeah. You have a chapter in your book titled Politics, Personalities, and Childbed Fever. Tell us a little bit about the childbed fever and why you wrote about that.
Yes. Well, I've always been fascinated with medicine to begin with. One time I thought I wanted to be a medical doctor. And so I became interested in the story of Ignaz Semmelweis. Now, he was a doctor in Vienna, Austria, From 1818 to 1865, that was his death, 1865, born in 1818.
Hmm.
He was born in Pest in Hungary, but he taught medical students at the hospital in Vienna after he graduated from medical school. And he was working in the maternity ward. Now, there were two different wards in the maternity ward. There was the midwifery ward, and they had a very low death rate among mothers that have just given birth. And then there was the medical ward, and that's where Semmelweis was. And there were all medical, male medical students working there. And there was a very high rate of childbed fever. And it was a really horrible disease. It started out as an infection, became sepsis, and the woman and the infant would die within hours or days. And in some cases, an entire row, bed after bed after bed, would result in the mortality of the mother and child. Semmelweis was trying to figure out what was going on. And a friend of his was doing an autopsy on one of these women who had died the day before. The medical students went to the mortuary and did autopsies every morning. Well, this particular doctor pricked himself with a scalpel and ended up coming down with childbed fever. He died as a result. And that gave Semmelweis the idea that there was something inside that body. That was before we knew about bacteria and that bacteria caused viruses, caused disease, not viruses. And so what he did is he realized that the medical students were doing these autopsies and they weren't washing their hands. They wiped their hands on their bloody aprons. They took them off, and then they went into the obstetrical unit and started doing internal examinations on the women who were in labor. And without washing their hands, they did internal exams on woman after woman. And what was happening is the bacteria was transferring from their hands onto their genital organs, reproductive organs. And then when the child was born, the tearing in the tissues caused the bacteria to seep into the tissues. And that's how it was carried. Now, Semmelweis instituted a very simple hand-washing program, a brush, lime water, and everyone had to wash their hands. Sounds like a good idea. The rate went right down to the mortality rate on the nursing unit. And he thought that was great. The only problem was that his supervisor was tied to the zeitgeist of the old guard, and he refused to entertain the idea that doctors might be carrying disease on their hands to the patients that they were supposed to be helping.
Oh my.
So he thought that Semmelweis was insubordinate and ended up having him fired from the university. Semmelweis ended up going over back home to Pest, which is now Budapest, and working in a hospital there. Throughout the remainder of his life, he tried to promote his idea of hand washing unsuccessfully. And he was laughed at throughout Europe. He was called a charlatan. No one would accept the idea that you had to wash your hands, that there might be bacteria on your hands. And he actually died before we actually discovered bacteria. But the good thing that came out of it is that once people started washing their hands, the death rate went down again, and Semmelweis has finally been recognized for his discovery.
Hmm.
There is a statue for him in Budapest. There's a medical school named after him. And Austria actually issued a stamp with his photograph on it, or with his image on it.
Man, all over washing your hands.
All over washing your hands. Something as simple as that.
Wow.
That no one would accept.
Oh, wow. I tell you, what year was this, do you recall, or what era?
Well, he lived from 1818 to 1865, so this happened right around 1850, I believe.
1850s, yeah. My goodness, washing your hands.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad we do now. I'm glad the doctors do now.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to have to take a short break here just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here in Dearborn out of Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with author Kathleen Marden, author of the book Science Was Wrong, Startling Truths About Cures, Theories, and Inventions That They Declared Impossible. Let's talk, did we cover the childbed fever?
Completely? Yes, we just talked about that.
Yeah,
was Ignaz Semmelweis.
Yeah, we covered it completely. Then. And your book starts off with, pretty much with the man will never fly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And what are some of the comments that were made by some of the geniuses back then? Do you recall offhand?
Well, yes. There was the astronomer Simon Newcomb, and he published an article showing why anything heavier than air or flight by man was out of the question. And he was America's most distinguished 19th century astronomer. And he stated, I have a quote right here, he said, "The demonstration that no possible combination of known substances, known forms of machinery, and known forms of force can be united in a practical machine by which a man shall fly long distances through the air seems to this writer as complete as it is possible for the demonstration of any physical fact to be." So he was saying it was just absolutely impossible. Man would never fly. There was the British royal astronomer, Sir Richard van der Riet Woolley. He lived from 1906 to 1986. And he also made silly claims about space flight. And he said in Time magazine, in 1956, mind you, "It's utter bilge. I don't think anybody will ever put up enough money to do such a thing." What good would it do us if we spent the same amount of money on preparing first-class astronomical equipment? We would learn much more about the universe. It is all rather rot.
What year was this?
He made that statement in 1956.
1956.
Yes.
That was about space travel.
That was about space travel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that long before we put our own satellite up.
Right, right.
And what was it, 1960? I'm trying to think when we went to the moon for the first time.
69. Yes, I remember the day we landed on the moon. I was mopping floors at Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Uh-huh. That was the year that my Uncle Barney died.
Mm.
So he didn't live to see man land on the moon.
Mm.
And my grandfather had always hoped to see man land on the moon, and he died in 1968, in the summer of 68. So neither of them had the opportunity to see that. That was unfortunate.
Right. Well, you can see where the mindset of humanity was back in 61, because, yeah, you know, man will never reach the moon. Man will never get outside of our atmosphere. How in the world, we couldn't go to some other planet. How in the world could they come here? You know?
Absolutely. That is the mindset. Don't have that technology, if we don't have that scientific knowledge, no one can have it.
Right, right. Because we are the most intelligent creatures in the universe.
Yes. For a long time, we thought we were the center of the universe.
I was going to say.
We haven't quite gotten over that train of thought.
I was going to say, that's tantamount to saying we are the center of the universe.
Yes, absolutely.
You know? So at any rate, man would never reach the moon. I remember my grandmother saying that man would never reach the moon. And so many people have said that. I didn't, you know.
There was a very famous scientist who thought that if we did reach the moon, we would simply sink down into hundreds of feet of dust so that we would, anyone who tried to go up there would end up perishing for that reason.
He thought that the moon was a dust ball?
Yes, yes.
Did man ever really think that the moon was made of green cheese?
Well, I haven't researched that, but anything is possible.
I used to hear that when I was a kid. Moon's made out of green cheese. And hearing some of the things, reading some of the things in your book, how science was wrong, I just wonder if they thought it was actually made out of green cheese. Who knows?
Yeah.
I remember the Chinese used to, Chinese used to bang pots together during an eclipse to make that dragon go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who it was, maybe caveman would throw stones at the moon. just, that's crazy.
Well, people have been historically very superstitious. Yep. If we didn't understand science, and we attributed it to gods or spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We tried to make it stop.
Right. Trying to make it stop, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the Mayans used to sacrifice humans.
Absolutely, yes.
When the sun went down, so that the sun would come back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Let's stop talking about that.
Yes, that's a gruesome thought.
So if man could never reach the moon, now the way of thinking is that alien beings, well, most people believe that there are extraterrestrials on other planets.
Yes.
But I would say 45-50% of the population feel that they can't get here from there because we can't get there from here.
Yes, it depends upon the poll, but
right.
Yes, that is the mindset of a percentage of the population.
Right.
That they, you know, that some planet somewhere in our galaxy must be populated with perhaps intelligent life.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that there probably aren't many.
Right. It makes me wonder if Earth is populated with intelligent life. And how many of these extraterrestrials that are that intelligent to be able to get here from there, I wonder where their science is at this time, and if they still have, a list of impossibilities.
And, you know, they don't have to be a lot more intelligent than us.
Huh.
They only have to be more developed on an evolutionary scale, meaning that maybe they're 1,000 years older. Their civilization is 1,000 years older.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's 100,000 years older. Think of where we were thousands of years ago and where we are now.
Right.
Where we are not going to stop developing our technology in the year 2012. It's going to go on and on and on. Think of where we might be 500 years from now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, quantum physics, that word that I can't pronounce, quantum physics states that it's possible that they can get here from there through wormholes by bending space-time.
Yes, absolutely.
And I firmly believe that I witnessed that in 1962, because I've told this story before, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. I watched this humongous craft come through a pinhole in a clear night sky, and it just grew and grew and grew, and just like the sky gave birth to this craft. And that's, you know, I believe I've witnessed the vortex, and that's how they get here from there.
I believe that you're correct. Yeah. From all of the reports that I've received, that seems to be what is happening.
Okay, you've heard that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Many, many people have reported that kind of effect to me, where it's almost like a vortex. And also, a lot of people said that it seems to materialize in front of their eyes as this is happening.
Now, just materializing, that to me would be coming through of the veil of another dimension. Wouldn't that sound to you like that?
Well, I think that we have to think about vortexes and dimensions as being sort of one in the same thing. There's a dual kind of action going on there.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding of what I'm learning, and in talking with theoretical physicists about it, I've only had one class and one course, I should say, in physics. So I'm not a physicist for sure, but I do consult with theoretical physicists to elucidate me and enlightens me about this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it seems that all of these things are possible theoretically. Also, the idea of ETs passing through solid structures and abductees being taken through their windows or their walls or their roofs, how does that happen? Well, I've been talking to a theoretical physicist about that as well, based upon information that I've received. And that information that I've received is that people feel that they can feel a tingling and a vibration kind of coursing through their bodies. They might feel electric shocks going through their bodies, and then they're moving. And many have told me that they feel like their body is just coming apart as they're moving, and they're just passing through a solid structure. So the physicist that I speak with said that, yes, theoretically, this is possible. We have the math for it. What you have to do is for the human body and the ET body, if the ET is there too, to vibrate at the same frequency. And then that solid structure has to be brought to the state of vibrating at the same frequency as well. And when that happens, solid matter can pass through solid matter. So I thought that was very, very interesting to learn that, and that we have even done it on a very small scale in a laboratory.
Really?
Yes.
Aha. So we know it's possible.
Yes, we know that it's theoretically possible, and that it's been done on a very small scale.
Yeah.
Now, if it's been done on a small scale in 2011, 2012, imagine where we'll be 500 years from now.
Right. That's right. How many things have started out on a small scale? We've, you know, learned that, that's possible. And it's just commonplace today.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, all of this is a great mystery, but there are some theoretical answers and solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say polarity of the atoms, too, a reverse polarity of the atoms. Maybe that's pretty much what you're talking about. Would cause one solid object to go through another solid object. If you reverse the polarity on the of the atoms in only one of those objects.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another theory.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, alien abduction. Is, but science looks at that and they say, well, they look at the fact that these aliens go through walls, that take us through walls or closed windows. And they also look at the the descriptions and videos of the aerodynamics of the craft, and they say that's got to be a fake. It's got to be wrong. It's got to be it's impossible because it defies the laws of physics. It defies the laws of aerodynamics. It defies the laws of physics and aerodynamics as we know them.
Yes, as we know them. Now, all of this is possible if they have some way of creating their own gravitational field on the craft.
Right.
Now, we don't know how to do that.
Or within this prodigious light that they project onto the ground or through the windows and walls. They need to do that because it would seem that outside of this light or outside of the vicinity or proximity of their craft, they seem to be out of their element, you know what I'm saying? Like in Brazil, that being was allegedly captured, the one where the little girl said, "We saw the devil." Have you heard about that?
This was, saw the devil.
Yeah, several years ago.
Refresh my memory on that
okay,
one.
Okay, this little alleged alien being, and it appeared to have little protrusions on his head, was seen after a UFO was seen landed, and he was kind of huddled up against a wall as if he was lost. He appeared to be lost and frightened, and these two little girls in Brazil saw him and screamed and ran away and told their mother or grandmother, whoever, "We saw the devil."
Mm-hmm.
And then later that day, the military captured this creature, and mm-hmm. one of the military men touched the creature with his bare hands. And a few days later, this soldier who had touched it got very ill and died. They couldn't figure out what was wrong.
I remember that case now.
Right, okay.
You refresh my memory in Brazil.
Right.
Yes, very interesting. There's something about the ET's bodies, and they, I don't know if they are in a different frequency than we are or exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that they're mammals from everything that I have heard about them.
Mm.
I don't believe that they would pass disease on to humans. I don't think that we're sort of compatible in that sense.
Well, it appeared that in this case, just touching this creature passed on some kind of a disease.
Passed something on, yes.
Something that, you know, was probably just ordinary germs like we have on us to them, but so foreign to us that our immune system was just, you know, could not handle it.
Yes. There is a problem, it seems, with contact with ETs affecting the human immune system. In A recent survey that Denise Stoner and I have been working on, this is part of a research project,
mm-hmm.
and actually there are three questionnaires posted on my website, and that is www.Kathleen, with a K, dash Marden, M-A-R-D-E-N, .com. Now, you can go online and find my questionnaires. One is a questionnaire for alien abduction experiencers, another one for ET technology, and another one for people who deny having been abducted by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found among the abduction experiencers is that about 42% say that they have a formal medical diagnosis of chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome.
Hmm.
And this is kind of a devastating illness. People have to leave their jobs when they have it. It's a long-term kind of illness. It's not just being tired. There are all sorts of problems that take place. Cognitive problems, extreme weakness, fatigue, fevers, very similar to mononucleosis.
Hmm.
Now, this occurs in less than 1% of the general population, but I'm finding 42% of abduction experiences are reporting they have a medical diagnosis with this disease. So there's something going on here, and I sure wish the scientific community would take a look at it.
Do you think it's suggesting possibly that ET has given them this bug? And their
yes.
Our immune
yes.
system
there
is...
seems to be a correlation there, a link between
right.
abduction experiencers and contact with ETs and getting this syndrome. We have not been able, our medical profession has not been able to identify a retrovirus. We don't know exactly what causes it. I don't know. I'm even wonder if it has something to do with passing human bodies through solid surfaces.
Maybe.
Or through the lights, or is it related to light sources? Who knows?
Maybe we caught something from the varnish, you know. Don't know.
Hmm.
Can't get that close to varnish. I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, and 89.3 FM on your radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with author Kathleen Marden, author of, not only co-author of Captured with Stanton Friedman, but also of Science Was Wrong. And Kathleen, you have a chapter called The Conundrum of Alien Abduction.
Yes.
And you wrote about a variety of personality disorders that academic psychologists thought might account for the belief that a person has been abducted by aliens. What makes you think that some alien abduction cannot be explained away so easily?
Well, first of all, about 40% of abduction experiencers have a conscious memory of at least part of their abduction. They have seen UFOs up close. They might have observed non-human entities looking back at them. They are wide awake when it happens. There are multiple witnesses who also observe this. So how can you say that it's all a figment of everybody's imagination, or that it's sleep paralysis or hypnagogic hallucinations, hypnopompic hallucinations, when this occurs?
Yeah. Sleep paralysis? Or did you mention
sleep
that?
Sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
By the way, there's an article on my website about sleep paralysis, and It's written specifically for people who wonder if they might have been abducted,
mm-hmm.
because some of the symptoms are similar to sleep paralysis,
right.
but many of the symptoms of abduction are not similar. And as I said, many people are awake when it happens.
Now, when you have cases like Bud Hopkins witnessed, where there are at least 20 or 22 witnesses that he mentioned, watching these three little beings float this woman up to a craft, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's sleep paralysis.
There are witnesses to abductions,
mm-hmm.
but the general public often doesn't hear that information.
No.
It's kept away from them,
yeah.
or the truth is carefully crafted into a lie,
yeah.
and presented as misinformation about the case.
Mm.
And so the American public often doesn't hear the truth.
Right. If the case could be sleep paralysis, if there's only one witness and that's the abductee, and it happened while he was in bed, then we can say sleep paralysis.
Yes, absolutely.
And get away with it.
Sleep paralysis is a possibility.
Yeah, but when you have a case,
people do have it.
When you have a case like the book Witnessed, when you have a case like Fire in the Sky, then we try to keep that. They try to keep that quiet, correct?
Absolutely.
So.
There are people who do everything they can to try to discredit those cases, to attack the witnesses, to totally discredit the primary witness, to make it seem that it's all a big lie.
It's like Stanton Friedman says, if you can't attack the data, attack the witness, right?
Absolutely, and it happens over and over again.
Right.
It happened to my Aunt Betty Hill.
Yes.
Throughout her life, people said she was delusional. People did everything they could, and Philip Klass was one of the biggest who disseminated misinformation about that case. So many people today don't even know the truth about the Betty and Barney Hill UFO abduction experience because there has been so much false information on television and in articles and in books.
Then I would recommend the book Captured. That would set the record straight. And so the bottom line, throughout history, science has declared many things to be impossible and were later proven wrong. So do you think that alien visitation and abductions may one day be an addendum to your book?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, we have a massive amount of evidence that UFOs are real. Take a look at Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14, for example. There were many, many cases here. It was 3,201 cases were evaluated in Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of those, the unknown were 21.5%. And of the unknown, 35.1% were excellent sightings. So the better the sighting, the more likely it was to be unknown. And despite that, Donald Quarles, Secretary of the Air Force, on October 25th, 1955, came out and told the American public that only 3% could not be identified, and that probably, if given more time, we'd have a conventional explanation for those as well. So not 21.5%, which was the finding, the scientific finding, but he decided to reduce it to 3% to make the American public feel better.
But that was at the end of the in other words, if you had to read the whole case, the whole Blue Book, we're talking about Blue Book, right?
We're talking about, we're talking about Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14.
Okay, if you had read the whole report, would you have found out that there was, 21%?
Okay, I think you're thinking about the scientific study of unidentified flying objects.
Oh, yes.
The Condon Project?
Okay, yes.
Okay, that was a different project. Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14 was in 1955. That's when the conclusion was drawn.
Oh, okay.
Now, the Condon Committee started out, actually, with Robert Lowe writing a memo to the University of Colorado stating that the trick would be make it look like this was a serious study when actually the scientists involved had almost no chance of finding a UFO. Let's see, I have the quote here. He said, in order to undertake such a project, one would have to approach it objectively. That is, one has to admit the possibility that such things as UFOs exist. It is not respectable to give serious consideration to such a possibility. The very act of admitting these possibilities just as possibilities puts us beyond the pale. It is quite easy to imagine, however, that psychologists, sociologists, and psychiatrists might well generate scholarly publications as a result of their investigations of saucer observers. So that after the Condon Committee came to its conclusion. The National Academy of Sciences approved the finding, and after that, funding was given to academic studies of people who observed or stated that they observed UFOs or people who stated that they had been abducted in an attempt to find out what was wrong with them. Why would they imagine these things that we all know are impossible were seen by them.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're coming. They put the money out to come at another angle. Why?
Yes. Let's not study the physical evidence. Let's not study the photographic evidence. Mm-hmm. Let's study the people to see what's wrong with them.
See what's wrong with them. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I hope I live long enough to read the addendum to your book.
And there were many, many academic studies done, and that's what I wrote about in The Conundrum of Alien Abduction, is some of those academic studies. And then I expanded that in 2010 in the MUFON International UFO Symposium Proceedings. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote a very large article about the results of all of these studies. And what they found out is that people who believe they've been abducted are no more fantasy prone than the general population if they fit all of the criteria for having had a real abduction.
Right. You also have a book called UFOs and Aliens. Tell us about that.
Yes, UFOs and Aliens. Is there anybody out there? I have one chapter in that book, and Stan Friedman has two chapters. We also have a chapter by Nick Pope, Gordon Chisholm, Jim Maroney, Micah Hanks, Nick Redfern, Don Schmidt, from a Roswell researcher, John White, who is actually my literary agent and a longtime UFO researcher, Tom Carey. Eric Von Daniken even has a chapter in this book. But my chapter is titled Alien Abduction, Fact or Fiction? So I talk about the history of alien abduction, talk about the Antonio Villas Boas case in Brazil in 1957, the Hill case, the Travis Walton case, talk about three women from Kentucky, Casey County, Kentucky, who were abducted by a UFO as they were traveling home at night from having a dinner together. This craft came down. It looked like a plane that was crashing. And it suddenly stopped over their vehicle. And a light shined into their car that made the women very, very hot. And their eyes burn and made them not feel very well. The car was traveling along at 80 miles an hour, and then it stopped, and it was pulled backwards and up into a craft. And all three of them were given physical exams, and experiments were performed on them. And that was a very interesting case that not many people know about. It. It's also, I wrote about the Buff Ledge, Vermont UFO abduction of two young people in their late teens. This happened in 1969. And Walter Webb, who is the UFO investigator who investigated my aunt and uncle's abduction, also did this investigation. He's a very, very fine UFO investigator, very scientific.
So, you are a certified hypnotist. I've been thinking about getting a couple of hypnotists on the show, just interviewing them on the phone to see what they think about. Ask them this question. In your opinion, is hypnosis a good investigative tool? Now, I'll ask you that question. Do you think it is good?
Well, let me qualify my statement by saying that hypnosis can be used very effectively if you have multiple witnesses and they all have amnesia. And they are hypnotized separately and they do not have the opportunity to speak with each other about what they said under hypnosis. And a good hypnotist is going to be able to impose amnesia again, just like Dr. Simon did with Betty and Barney Hill. And then you can do a comparative analysis of each person's statements made about their experience. So I think that it's very a scientific value in that case. Hypnosis is not a straight line to the truth.
No.
Hypnosis is based upon your subjective perception of what happened to you. And it may or may not be consistent with the truth of that matter. So if you have read a lot, if you're highly knowledgeable about UFO abductions and you really want to have had one, you can confabulate one in hypnosis. You can do that.
Well, if are you saying that a hypnotist can lead you in that direction, or you can...
You can lead yourself there.
Can lead yourself.
I mean, people can lie under hypnosis. They can lie to themselves, and they can lie to a hypnotist. Also, you certainly can be led by a hypnotist into making statements about things that didn't really happen, just by the hypnotist making leading statements. So that's something you have to watch out for. Now, a hypnotist who specializes in working with abductees or abduction experiencers knows the ins and outs of hypnosis. They know the foibles. They know the weaknesses of hypnosis, and they know not to lead the witness.
Right.
And they're probably going to only hypnotize someone who has conscious recall of having seen a craft in the sky. Maybe they've seen non-human entities looking down at them, and maybe there are multiple witnesses. That is the responsible way to do hypnosis. And in doing that, you can work with people who are experiencing trauma as a result of their experience and reduce their level of trauma through working with them through hypnosis. But it takes a highly skilled person. You can't go to your corner hypnotist who works with people on weight loss and smoking cessation and expect them to be a good hypnotist at working with you to recover your memories of alien abduction, right. It could lead to even more trauma and a great deal of trauma.
All right. Kathleen Martin, please give us your website again.
Okay. It's www.kathleen-martin, MARDEN.com.
Very good. Kathleen Martin, I appreciate you coming on and being with us on We Are Not Alone. And unfortunately, once again, we are out of time.
Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure.
Thank you. Bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on the talk shows and on the homepage, and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn 89.3 megahertz on your FM dial. I'm Go Mike Holloway coming at you live from the campus of Henry Ford Community College. It's time to move and groove with Rock'em Blues on a bonus edition of the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway show, complete with that driving beat that sounds so sweet so that you can move your feet. And baby, now that you know, it is on with the show.